Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Yes, everybody, what's going on? Welcome to Stretford Paddock. Joining me today, I have got Boosh and I have got Patrick. And before we get into this absolutely perfect start that Manchester United have had this weekend, can I just say thank you to 20,000 legends that have come and joined and subscribed to Stretford Paddock in just a few months that we've been going. I didn't expect this.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is ridiculous.
Amazing.
Definitely didn't expect this. It's been absolutely sensational. Thank you guys for the continued support. And I promise you, Boo Boo, it's going to get even better as we can attract more people and different guests and all that sort of stuff. So thank you to you guys. Get your questions and comments in right throughout the show as well, because this is an interactive one. Yeah. Oh, we've got the kettle on. Come and join us with a brew, and let's get stuck into it then. So right then, that was all right, wasn't it?
It was great, wasn't it? It
could have gone better, you know.
How?
Goodness, that's the point. you know, that we weren't 100%. You know, we're not going to start challenging for the title. We certainly haven't guaranteed top four. There's lots of...
Why not?
Because I think at the beginning of the game, we were a bit dodgy. Not at the back per se, but at the midfield, which caused problems for the back. I don't think necessarily dealt with. I think at times, Shaw didn't look 100% to me. And I think now the fact that he is the weak link in the back means that we've made incredibly massive strides from where we were at the end of the season. Exactly. Player of the season, now you're weak link at the back. Yeah,
we're compensating a lot of misplaced passes in the first half, really, weren't we, by having to defend quite a lot. I felt as though once the players got a grip of the Chelsea press, that we really did start to progress up the pitch.
We let them have the ball in certain areas,
which is because we counterattack. That's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's style. And when we nailed that counterattack on in the second half, we were immense.
We won it back. It's almost like we give them that middle ground.
Yeah, they
have it. We press them when they had it. We press the keeper.
Yeah.
So many times, if you go and watch the game back, so many times there were instances where United pressed both the keeper and the centre half.
Ball goes out of the pitch.
Forced him into a shit pass.
Yeah.
Forced him into it. Then sometimes we'd have it through the middle, try and fight hard again, closing them down as they crossed like a 10-yard out. I thought, from a tactical point of view, that's what I called the shootout idea.
What I enjoyed as well is that we seem to be first club, the second balls. So, for example, when we won the penalty, I think was it Lingard that got fouled?
It was Rashford, on the initial build-up.
Oh, yeah. And then the ball sort of went up in the air, and Rashford was like, right, I want it. Just literally went up. And obviously,
and we've got a better Zuma. Efficiency in it, a lot of practice. We will get better and better as well. I think that's what's going to be a real interesting thing is to see. Yeah.
We grew into the game as well. We like at the beginning of the game, we were very shaky, didn't look comfortable on the ball. And as the game went on, we were passing it around the back comfortably. We were passing it even through the midfield more comfortably. There's promising signs that if we can do that in a game, then we can do that throughout the season as it goes as well. Like I said, I do think that there are sides that we need to worry about. Really and truly, Chelsea should have probably scored two goals in the first half. We probably should have gone into that 2-1 down or something. Luckily, we didn't. And I think that, you know, you've got to have a little bit of luck going into this.
Yeah,
but you also need a lot of skill, which is what we had.
Yeah. Is that better? Are we on now?
Yeah.
You seeing OBS if that's on or not?
Yeah.
Do you want to get OBS on so we can see? Is that working? That looks like it's working.
Right,
apologies for that. I think my mic was off. But yeah, fantastic. I was very happy with a lot of aspects of that. I was very happy with, initially, the starting 11, to be honest with you. The starting 11 was great in terms of what it offered. And I thought Pereira was the surprise package in that. I thought he played very well. Not perfect. By very well, I mean like a 7.
It's the stuff really. He did off the ball that was better than what he did on it.
And that's why I think he was selected.
I think with Andreas, I think even though he's at an age where is he about 24, coming up 24, around that age, I think he's still a work in progress because obviously I'd say last season, especially towards the latter stages, he did look as though he was one of the most energetic and fittest players on the pitch in terms of like running and stuff like that. I just think like our fans really did murder him after the Burnley game. And I think like Lindelof got absolutely murdered by some of our fans after the Huddersfield game. I think he's starting to build his way back up in regards to confidence in his overall game style. I think that's something that we need to do with our players is just make sure that we support them because otherwise he could be a shadow of themselves.
Think about what Fred offers us as a footballer. Mm-hmm. Think about what Andreas Pereira offers you as a footballer. Mm-hmm. Now, you can say, well, I wouldn't pay 50 million for Fred, but we paid 50 million for Fred.
So we've got him.
Is Fred that much better than Andreas Pereira?
No, he's not.
Right, so Andreas Pereira, we would possibly agree, is a 50 million pound player.
If those circumstances that we had buying Fred for 50 million the same thing, then you could see that happening.
So when we have the likes of Mason Greenwood, when we have the likes of maybe Jimmy Garner, Angel Gomez, Andreas Pereira, yeah. All of the players that are featuring right now, when basic average players like Fred are costing you £50 million, why aren't more people turned into their academies?
Because their academies aren't good enough, frankly.
But why aren't their academies good enough?
Because
that's absolutely
they don't invest money in it. They don't invest money in it. They don't give those players game time. There is an element that big clubs do snap up the best youth players. Man City will, all over the country, all over the world, will find a youth player that they like. They'll ship their family and them over to Manchester, buy them a house, get their parents jobs. So there is an element of that.
Okay, so if you're a smaller club, like...
you got to go local. Local.
Right, okay. Newcastle should have the pick of the Northeast footballers.
Yeah.
You would assume.
It should do.
Yeah. Right? And they're also a team with a lower barrier to entry to their first team.
Yeah.
They've just spent 40 million, I think, on a striker. On Joe Linton? Did they pay 40 million for
him? Joe Linton, yeah.
So, stupid. Right? Why can't they start spending 40 million? Because if they can bring through more likes of Sean Longstaff, if they can bring through more Andy Carrolls, which they sold for massive money back in the day, at what point does it become an economics thing? Not even like, when United are dealing with, we're shopping in the top end. So yeah, you're looking at your Neymars, your Mbappes are going for hundreds of millions of pounds. Why isn't it now the thing that people are just going bollocks to it? And going more into it.
Because you need short-term success, firstly. Like, Newcastle need to stay in the Premier League, so therefore they need to have a striker who can get 15-plus goals.
If you spend
now,
40 million on your academy, that might come. You wouldn't yield something.
Yeah, you absolutely would. You wouldn't yield it right now. What does Newcastle need? They need a striker who can yield 15-plus goals right now.
You go and find a 16-year-old that's considered the best 16-year-old in his position in the world. That's doable for a Newcastle to bring him. And because you've got to sell him the dream. If you're the recruitment guy at Newcastle, you go, yeah, go to City if you want, go to Arsenal. I'll see you in 5 years when they get rid of you because you've not played a minute. Or come to Newcastle, spend 1 year in the academy and we'll put you in the first team. What are you doing as a 17-year-old, 16-year-old?
Well, your heart would go, oh, I'm going to Newcastle. Whatever.
You'll get the big moves.
The big clubs throw money at the families. The idea of being the next Marcus Rashford or the next Mbappe or the next superstar is so appealing that they're gone.
The World Cup. Harry Maguire is another example of a player that came through at a smaller club, ended up going for a world record.
We know it's the better way of doing it.
There's two players off the top of my head that came through at big academies, and that's Sterling and Marcus Rashford.
I think that
even like Sir Jesse Lingard had gone out on loan places first. No one generally just pops in, makes a debut and stays in like Rashford did. Look at Walker, look at Harry Maguire, look at Joe Hart. Look at Jamie Vardy. You look at all of these players, Harry Kane. All of these players have got lower league experience.
Yes. I feel as though in England we have like a common misconception where if these players aren't foreign or have a fancy name, but they're just, you know, these Brexit footballers who are just like...
Hey, don't knock it. That was our transfer window, mate.
It worked.
just pass it sideways and just take the easy option. We're not skillful. We don't have any flair. But it's nonsense, really, because, I mean, when you look at some of the players now, it's like Harry Maguire would have been regarded at Hull as a Brexit footballer. by some who maybe hadn't watched him play.
He could have gone one way or the other, couldn't he? He would definitely be a player you could have seen Burnley side.
Yep.
Yeah.
But he's also had the ability on the ball and also the aerial ability that's made him be considered for a team in the top
World record centre back now.
And that's
let's call it what it is. Yeah, world record centre.
And that's another element to the youth debate is the fact that we don't seem to give English young players who are coming through the lower league league many chances. And when we do give them chances, guess what? Ollie, Harry Maguire came through the hard way, did well. Jamie Vardy came through the proper hard way, right?
If you suit up in the National League, you're probably not going to play in a World Cup, are you?
No. And yet, you know what I mean? Here we are.
Did he actually play in the World Cup? No, he was in the squad.
No, he did,
He got injured late on in the Colombia game and didn't take a penalty, and everyone was asking why he didn't take it.
Played against Panama. He did. He came on. But that's the sort of, you know, especially Harry Maguire, which is very relevant now. The story of Harry Maguire is something we can all resonate to. You know, working class Sheffield lad, comes through the hard way at Sheffield Academy, goes to Hull, goes to Leicester, goes to United. That's a proper journey. And you know what? It's made him a better player because he's used to playing against physical players in the lower leagues. Well, he's used to playing against more technical players in the Premier League. It makes a more well-rounded player, which is why I think we should take more risks on players that come up that route and players who come out of academies.
I managed to grab a couple of minutes with coaches yesterday, talking about the under-23s playing against Rotherham in the week. I don't know how strong that Rotherham team was. I don't really watch Rotherham. And I know Rotherham are a team that I fancy for.
Yeah.
However, that was still adult football. I think Angel, as United's captain, faced off against a 37-year-old guy as captain to do the handshake and the concert.
And that type of experience is essential, right? Yeah. Knowing how, as a tiny guy like Angel Gomez, to stand toe-to-toe with a 30-year-old bloke who's basically doing it because it's his career and he gets paid for it and who will elbow you in the face.
United shredded them.
I feel as for these sort of games, as much as they are treated as being downgrading to the Football League sides, from a Premier League club academy point of view, it really weathers the players in regards to the physicality and the attributes that you need to succeed. Because the Premier League, people don't realise it is actually a rough and tumble league, especially compared to your European league.
Yeah, you take La Liga or the Serie A.
It's the speed of it. It's how fast it goes end to end and how much time you get on the ball. You get closed down with a quickness.
It's why Lukaku is going to go and tear up shit in the Serie A. Because what is he playing against? You know, people who are very technical and very slow, and you know he's going to be able to walk it. In the Premier League, that's why players who come from those leagues and come over take a little while to adapt, and some of them really perform, some of them don't. I think you can make an argument to say that, you know, it's not just United that made Ronaldo amazing, it's him having to learn how to play in a league like that that made him go and tear up.
Yeah, there's also that inner drive in him that wanted to be the best player in the world, but found it in physicality. There's all those stories of him hiding leg weights in the corners of the pitch and stuff, so none of the coaching staff would see him. He's trained with leg weights.
With Ronaldo, you just got to hold your hands up because I'm not saying he could have maybe still carried on to such a high level, but
I think he could.
You think Wayne Rooney, if you compare, like Wayne Rooney, if he'd put as much effort, like shape wise and physical wise, as Cristiano Ronaldo, he might still.
Tells you how good Rooney was, though.
Yeah.
Right, that he did what he did. Like trying a lot, most of the time. But also
Rooney was a 70s player that made a debut in
2000.
Which just tells you how good he is.
By the time he'd hit 30, he'd been there and done it all. Like he literally couldn't have had a better career if he tried. Like at United,
not really. The only thing he's lacking is a World Cup.
That's why you have to put Marcus Rashford down to have big things coming in his career. He might not be Ronaldo or whatever, but he's going to be world class. He is, you know, you can say he is the best 21-year-old apart from Mbappe. But
I spoke to Marcus's brother Dwayne about this, and I was like, he talks about some of the highs and some of the lows of Marcus's career. And I said, look, if he ain't Ronaldo, he ain't Ronaldo, right? He probably isn't going to be Ronaldo. But look who you're thinking about. Look who comparing you are comparing. Like, well, he's not going to be as good as Ronaldo. All right. He's not as good as Rooney. Who knows, right? He might end up breaking one of Rooney's records if he stays long enough. He might not.
He's the only,
do you know what?
He's the only player who has potential.
You're talking about all-time greats. Now, whatever your thoughts on Wayne Rooney, the personality, Wayne Rooney, the footballer, the guy that suited up on the pitch wearing a Man United shirt, didn't give less than 100% every single time. And, you know, there was a period in the late 2000s where Wayne Rooney was the most enjoyable thing to watch because you knew what you was getting with him.
that sort of waned, and the end of his career came probably at the right kind of time. But Wayne Rooney, for a period of time, probably because he didn't have a good tan, and he probably didn't look amazing with his top off, but there was a period of time where Wayne Rooney should have been in the nominations for the Ballon d'Or. But I think it's heavily, heavily favoured to Barcelona.
It's,
Real Madrid.
It's heavily favoured towards the European League, specifically the Serie A, specifically the La Liga, and specifically Ronaldo and Messi. Last year, probably.
But Modric's stats. Modric was like when Ryan Giggs won Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Because he was. I think Ryan Giggs played like 23 games.
Won,
that year.
Where he wins like BBC Sport Personality or something.
Yeah, and you're like.
That's what it was, and you're just like, okay, I voted for him because it's my gig.
The thing is, it's like with Modric, is it was like, yeah, he won the Champions League, but when you look, it was like, well, Ronaldo kept him like carrying him, carrying all the time, and it's like
Ramos with how many last minute winners.
In the World Cup, Modric was decent for Croatia, but he also had great teammates around him. Like Rakitic pulled out some good displays, like against Argentina, and you know,
Brozovic was great, Perisic was great. Yeah. They had a great team, and he was a great part of a great team. I think someone that gets to a World Cup final and wins a Champions League has had a pretty good season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I felt it was more about the need to not have Messi and Ronaldo win it.
Yeah.
Than it was. I mean, what did Messi score? Like 40-something goals again last season?
Yeah, being frank, Messi should have won it, but because they've got so much stick for the past decade because it's just been Ronaldo and Messi.
But do you know what? If they're the best players in the world, that's who wins it.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, that's what it should be. Like, they've made 40-goal seasons boring. Like, back in the 90s, a 20-goal striker was like, whoa. I remember reading an article when I was about 11 or 12, something like that, because I never rated Brian McClair. Brian McClair was the first person, I think, to score probably 20, or it might have been 30 or something, since George Best, which puts him in some right company. And I remember thinking, and it was like, he's a 20-goal-a-season striker. And I remember thinking, 20 goals. At the time, no one scored 20 goals for United. That was why we ended up signing like Cantona, because fucking no one scored them sort of goals. 20 goals a season was unreal. In 1999, Dwight York won European Golden Boot. Him and Andy Cole only got 53 goals between the two of them and won everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you've got Cristiano Ronaldo bangs in 50 while he's texting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's nothing to him.
Which is why you can't there's another reason why you can't compare different eras of the Premier League and stuff like that together. Because people like Man City fans love to go, we've got 100 points, best team ever, you can't complain. You're like, yeah, but you're playing in a Premier League, which is significantly less competitive than what we won the treble.
It is, and there's a great graph which shows the progression of the average points the top four get and the winner gets versus what the middle and the lower teams get. And it literally is a big split. The lower teams are getting less points and the better teams are getting more points, which tells you that it's a less competitive league.
And I wonder whether that it's going to change a bit this season. It's still going to very much be the 1 and 2 of Man City and Liverpool, almost certainly being ahead of the rest.
Are we not winning the league?
You know what? We're close.
The problem is with being like a United fan, and obviously with growing up with us winning like everything of competing, is that I'm not saying we will, but you don't want to ever rule us out.
It's called being entitled as fuck.
There's that little kid.
I always just think, you know, just take one game at a time and see where we go, you know, because you can only focus on the next game. You're only as good as your last game.
Of course you can. No one saw Leicester come in, and it's an absolutely tired cliche to be like, well, Leicester did it. But they did do it, and they did it in an era.
Yeah.
Almost around these teams, virtually with all of these teams that are in the mix. Like I said, if you take it one game at a time and you win every game as you keep at some point you win the league. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think United have got that in us to compete on that front and the Europa.
Nah.
But if we phone in the Europa, well, now you're talking about a potentially different prospect.
I think it's
we did very well against top six sides with Ole.
Yeah, we did. But I think it's just... Look, the little kid in me is like, yeah, we're going to do it, obviously, because we beat Chelsea 4-0, get out of here. But then I grew up in an era where Chelsea and United were the big two, right? Them and Arsenal, and United and Arsenal, and then it was Chelsea and United. But it's just, I don't see it happening. I see us finishing maybe fourth and getting Europa League.
The biggest problem is that maybe in about 2014-ish or 15-ish, you'd say, oh, we've maybe got half a chance. But the problem is with Pep over the road at City is that you can go to grounds like maybe Arsenal or Spurs and you say, oh, a draw do us there. But the problem is they win them.
Yeah, yeah.
They just win. They just win that many points.
I think I was talking to somebody this morning. They sent me about Alisson potentially being out for 8 weeks, and I said that could end their season.
Yeah, done.
Because 2 months is enough. If you lose 3 games in this next 2 months, which could happen with Liverpool if they haven't got Alisson, that can end the season there and then for them. At least the league for them, because you lose 3 games, that's over in the league.
I think I read somewhere that one of the biggest adaptations that Ferguson had to sort of make over the course of his career was making teams better at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the season. Because as you need more and more points to win the league season on, the beginning of the season, which is often seen as a sort of lay period where you can tactically be very flexible.
Get me there or thereabouts at Christmas. Can you remember, 2 or 3 points and we'll win.
And then we can do the rest of
it. Can you remember, for example, 2004-05? Really slow start. 2005-06, again, a slow start. Chelsea shot off.
There you
2006-07, 5-1, first game at home to Fulham. You know, then we won the league.
That was the big, that's the thing now. Liverpool can't afford to lose Alisson for the next, even like 2-3 weeks, because if they lose 3 games, genuinely,
it's over.
It's not over, but it's close. The odds are down.
I'd say it's as good as over. You're looking for an absolute catastrophe.
Which tells you how good of a team you need to have, and how, therefore, how far away we still are from.
Oh yeah, we're miles away from that level of competing. Yeah. But so was Leicester. It's not about necessarily competing on all fronts at all that time. Was Liverpool the best team in Europe last year? Don't you fucking say a word, right? There wasn't. There wasn't the best team in Europe last year. It simply wasn't.
It was Man City, weren't it?
But they're European champions.
Yeah.
Were Spurs the second best team in Europe last year? Absolutely fucking not. But they're the runners-up in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've got to ride your luck a little bit.
Absolutely.
Could you say City were the best? To be honest, City might have been the best team in Europe last year.
Which is why the BT script is completely wrong and nothing's going to happen in it. Do you want to have a look at some of the results they put? I sent them to you.
So we have got... Here were some of the results this week. Liverpool 4, Norwich City, miles away. Let's go to that end up.
4-1.
Right, okay. West Ham 0, City 0.
Yeah, that happened.
That was miles away. And to be fair, I actually looked at that and went, City and Liverpool probably going to get 5 each this week.
Yeah.
Watford 0, Brighton 4. Was that 1-0?
Oh, God, no.
Wait, which one?
Watford? Brighton.
Brighton 1-3-0.
4, fair play.
See, how did they guess that?
Dunk was brilliant, that's all
I've
mean.
Tipped Brighton to go down, me. Bournemouth 4, Sheffield United 1.
1-0.
Burnley 1, Southampton 3-0. Yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I thought Southampton are shit, but
When Burnley want to do bits, they can do it.
To be fair, right, what I couldn't believe is that as much as he's a half decent player, Eric Peters got 2 assists as well.
Newcastle beating Arsenal. They obviously had that one.
Unfortunately,
wrong. That was a shit game, by the way.
Aubameyang was a nice finish, though.
Yeah, hang on. Can I just address a comment here? It said, Iman Azad says, in 99, we didn't even have the best team.
Well, to be fair, Juventus, we had the best team, but Juventus had a very strong team in Europe as well.
Juventus were the equivalent of like Real Madrid-ish.
Yeah, which is why that semi-final performance is one of like the best football
We had the best team in the Premier League.
No question.
Arsenal were good, but
we rode our luck at times, but we were the best.
Yeah, I mean, that Juve team, I guess they always think of a midfield, like David, Conte, Zidane, Deschamps.
Mate, Roy Keane and Paul Scholes at me. That's it. Done better than
Del Piero was out injured that year as well. So obviously that might have helped things a little bit, but they still had people and Zaghi up front.
People will always say, I think they finished like 6th or 7th in the league. That was why. But going into that, that was a... Read that midfield out again.
Zidane, Conte, David and Deschamps.
Right. Shut the fuck up. That's ridiculous.
It's dumb, isn't it?
That's an all-time greats midfield. Yeah, yeah. The only team that beats that in midfield is Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes, Roy Keane, David Beckham.
It's true, though, because they did.
Yeah.
That Roy Keane header is just... He's immense, isn't
it? Well, Fergie says it's the greatest ever contribution or performance
by a single player, by
Manchester United. Ever. But I know Roy Keane in an interview, because he's maybe a bit bitter as well, as Fergie says, I get offended at that because that's my job. But it's like,
it's Roy Keane for you.
I understand. But
I tell you what, he was my absolute idol growing up.
My father-in-law saw Roy Keane at the vets with his dog, Joe, the famous dog that he was walking, Labrador. Yeah. I'm assuming it's the same dog. He said it looked really old. It might be the same dog. It might be a new dog. But he said he's in the vets with a Labrador. I went, take a picture. And he was like, all right, I'll see if I get one. And I was like, I'm joking. Don't fucking take a picture of him because he might fucking lever you. And he was like, oh. Yeah, Roy Keane getting his dog at the
vets. He's a legend.
But doesn't like photos. There's loads of times people have said like, oh, they've been walking through town with Keane and Lee Sharp. and Lee Sharp occasionally gets asked for photos like that. Someone's come over to him and, "Oh, Sharpie, can I get a selfie?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like trying to get Roy Keane in the background.
He just
keeps fucking smacking the phone out. Where I'm like, "Fuck off with that shit." And you're just like, "Roy Keane, not a fan of selfies." No.
Add that to the other list of things that he's not a fan of.
So. Oh, it's a big list. It's a book, I think. Actually,
we got it around here somewhere, I think.
That Roy Keane's not a fan of. Roy Keane, in terms of, I think he's a psychopath. In all seriousness, I think he's a genuine psychopath.
Yeah. He is a psychopath, but he was a psychopath for us, and therefore he is a hero. Eric Cantona's a bit strange.
He's on the fucking phone, man.
What makes me laugh?
There's a wall of legends. No one's on here by accident.
What makes me laugh is that when we played Arsenal, I think it was in a game where Keane scored two at Highbury. Is that him and Vieira had...
Was this 2001?
Yeah.
Shaved head Roy Keane.
Him and Vieira had a scrap, and Vieira sort of shrugged off each other. The next thing you know, as if we didn't already have a psychopath in Roy, Yap Stam grabs Vieira back.
Oh, Yap Stam.
Yeah, that was that blue view cam, I think, kit off the top of my head. That for me was my favourite Roy Keane. Not the Juventus one. Uh-huh. That game and that version of Roy Keane was my favourite because he was all action. He was he covered every blade of grass, bollocked everyone and twatted everyone.
I mean, who was that player that tackled Roy Keane and injured him towards the end of the season?
Owens.
Right. The next opportunity he has, comes out, doesn't care about getting the ball, takes his legs out, injures him, basically ends the guy's career.
He hits him above his knee.
Yeah.
Right, no, he didn't end his career because that was his other knee. But he certainly didn't help elongate his career by what he did to him. And he fucking mulled him.
There you go.
And I worry about, like, the game has changed, it has. But who's that henchman in United? So we see Dan James took a kick in a bit yesterday. Scott McTominay took a kick in at times.
He held his own at times, but he definitely...
He was getting booted.
He was getting booted at times. But that it comes with age, that sort of thing.
Inter Milan, was it Skriniar, goes through Chong. And you're like, who's the person? Who's the Yap Stam? Who's the Roy Keane? That's going to be
Maguire.
That's the fucking last time you've done that, you prick.
Maguire is going to start taking
it. As much as he doesn't play very often, I'd say the only one who's capable.
Here we go.
You're saying Rojo. No, Rojo's different. Rojo's going to murder you. That's not a threatening to, oh, you calm it down.
That's not even a football thing. Yeah, that's just a...
Forget about that. No, Rojo, someone less. But like, where's our enforcer in the team? And I think we like. I think Herrera could have done it.
Herrera's
the thing is,
grab him.
Oh, there he goes.
Come here.
we've got a dog.
The thing is, when you look at like the City team, you see Fernandinho and Rodri. You don't see a player in our team who's just going to cynically just slice them.
What's your thoughts on those fouls by City? I'm a fan of gamesmanship.
I don't like them when they're against you or against other teams, but when they're for you, you understand why it is, which means that you have to accept them.
I mean, being a pretty cynical character myself, I actually really do like them. I'm the sort of person who, if it was my play, I'd be like, yeah, do it. But you can get away with it to an extent and it works and it breaks everything down and slows it down.
But it's the perfect...
But you're playing
game,
smart, aren't
you? Game management's in your hands.
Yeah. I'm all for tactical fouls. Like, remember... was it Nottingham Forest or no Newcastle? United lose 1-0 at home. Looks like they're going to lose 2-0. Solskjaer, other end of the pitch, bombs it, takes him out, walks off the pitch, doesn't even need to see the red card. He knows he's
standing ovation. He walks
off too. Exactly.
Because that's it. You know, and I wonder who that person is. I think Axel Tuanzebe's got the potential to be that enforcer.
I think Harry Maguire's got it as well.
Yeah, Maguire possibly. I was very impressed with some of the leadership.
If Fosu Mensah could get his knee right,
he's more Rojo. He's fucking not roofed in right. I don't think he's got that.
You think
that sort of? I don't know. There's something about him where I just don't think he's got that. Brian Robson tells a brilliant story where he was when we used to have the A League, the Lancashire League, and stuff like that. And Fergie goes, "Won't you get your fitness back? I'm going to put you in with the A League lads." He goes, "Playing with a couple of lads you might have heard of: Paul Scholes, David Beckham, Gary Neville.
Didn't he play a couple of times?
And Nicky Butt, right? Yeah. So he goes, Scholes he goes through because Scholes used to play at nine. Scholes he's gone through. Someone's fucking gone through the back of him, mulled him. The Robbo goes, I start walking over to go and be like, hey, he goes, I'm fucking Brian Robson. I'm England captain. I'm United club captain. He goes, yo, I think he was like 32 or something at the time. He's like, I'm here to look after these young lads, aren't I? He goes, before I got over there, Nicky Butt's got a guy by the throat. And he's like, okay. He goes, next thing, someone tries to go through Gary Neville. Gary Neville's followed him back.
Yeah.
He said, and then there's a foul on the edge of the box. And he goes, I got to take the free kick. David Beckham walks up. He's like, I take the free kicks in this team. And he was like,
all right.
I think these lads are going to be all right. Because well, and I think he's bang on because they had a bit of character about them.
Yeah.
I look at some of the lads coming through now, and sometimes you question, are some of these young kids that are coming through too nice? Is Marcus Rashford a bit too nice? Is Jesse Lingard?
I think they've got character in a different way, and I think that's with the game. It has evolved from hard men are playing 11 hard men against 11 hard men. It's changed,
and I think Brandon Williams, Ethan Laird, Jimmy Garner.
They've got it, do you think?
These are guys with character. You can see it in them.
And they're coming through. They're the next batch coming through. These are the guys you're going to see in pre-season next year, getting game time next year, under whoever it is. It will still be Ollie.
I would be shocked if Laird, Williams don't get debuts this year. Shocked. And Levitt.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. FA Cups, end of season, like, well,
Levitt,
ritual.
Levitt's
yeah.
a full Wales international, isn't he, as well?
I don't think he came on.
Picked him a squad.
Yes, he was in. He called up to the squad.
Which is mental, isn't it?
I mean, when you think he hasn't an academy, even, he hasn't even picked the ball for first.
I chatted to Dylan quite a lot, and I was saying to him, obviously Ryan Giggs is the manager. Yeah. And I said, mate, when I was talking to him, Bale hadn't joined the squad yet. I was like, is Bale in the squad with you? And he was like, nah. And I said, one ball over the top from you to Beck, because he's got that kind of skull sort of style of playing, style, not ability. He's got that kind of Scholesy style where he likes to spread it. He's certainly got that ball over the top. He likes to switch the play. And I just thought, I can see, because he's so comfortable in possession, physically I think he's got a lot to do, and pace I think he's got a lot that he needs to sort out. But ability on the ball is outstanding. Vision, outstanding. Scholes style vision. And I thought, just one ball over the top to Gareth Bale, and Ryan Giggs is going to be like, fucking start him.
Which is why I think you can never say the Class of 92 thing will never happen again. You're never going to have that many players that good all playing the same thing. But the closest you're going to get to it
is probably right now.
Is right now. You've got with Chong and Gomez.
I think Chong's not on the same level. I think Gomez, Greenwood.
And then Laird. And
but you've got to throw Marcus into this. Jesse's obviously too far.
You include Marcus.
Marcus is the Ryan Giggs of this team, where he's a couple of years older. Because the Class of 92 is as a brand. It's Ryan Giggs was 91. He made his debut in 91.
Yeah.
Half of them made the debut in 92. But then Phil Neville and... I think it was Scholes and Neville didn't make their debuts in 94 and 95.
Yeah, exactly. So it's spread over a period of time. This is that period. If it's ever going to happen again...
Yeah, you've got your Rashford as a start of that. And Tuanzebe, same year. So you've got those two in there. They're the elder statesmen of that. And then you've got Angel Gomez in the middle, and then you've got probably Jimmy Garner.
Jimmy Garner looks...
Jimmy Garner's got a future, I think. And then you've obviously got Mason coming up. But you've also got Shola Shortire, who's playing regularly now for the 18s at 15. This is like what Mason was doing.
It's what Gomez did as well.
Yeah, although, to be fair, I saw Angel at 13, and it looked like someone had just let a mascot run on the pitch. Like, whose kid's that? Like, sort him out. He looked like he was wearing a parachute. But there was just obviously that lateral movement. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Which is why I'm excited to see him get game time, whether it's in the FA Cup, whether it's in the
Europa League. How good did he look against Rotherham? He tore Rotherham a new one.
Yeah.
But that midfield three, him, Levitt, Garner. And then on Friday night, it was Galbraith, Levitt, Garner. And I was like, shit, Galbraith out of nowhere. That's why I was super excited to go to it. Galbraith's got... Now, do you know what? I threw a tweet out saying, like, between these lads, they've got something. Galbraith was the one, but I think United lack energy as a number eight. That's what I wanted someone to end on Bailey or something, right? Now, Galbraith's obviously fucking miles away from that. But if we need a job, like, if we're, like, desperate, we could do a lot worse. He'll be a full international very soon.
We should be looking inside. We haven't brought in X and Y and Z number of players. Look inside the club.
Rather than spend 50 million on a new player.
Yeah.
What's three games?
Nothing.
Half an hour off the bench for one player to see if he's got it. Because I know that he's expanded the first team squad to include a lot of the 23s. And we also shipped out a fuck ton of players. And they're still going. I think George Tanner's gone today.
Yeah.
There's a very small, and I think it's deliberate, 23 squad, and the vast majority of those are under 19s. Angel's too old for that. I think Chong's too old for that now. But the likes of Williams, Garner, Laird, doing the Levitt, first team. Those are all under 19s, which means that they can play. Oh, we haven't fucking got it. Never mind. I was going to say they can play Youth League. We're not in the fucking Youth League.
Yeah.
But they're obviously going to be in the Checker Trade, leasing.com, whatever the fuck it's called, league.
Which is why I was really annoyed I couldn't go to the wrong game because the trains were messed up, because I wanted to see how they all interacted together. Which I'm sure is mint.
It looked mint.
Yeah.
It did look like it was a good old time. I really enjoyed that, to be honest. Just watching that. The next game, I think we're in fucking August. London again. 27th. I'm in London again. So I'm like, I don't know if I can make it.
We'll be able to send people.
Lincoln is. Okay. Lincoln
that's
on the 27th.
Not, that's not too far away. It's near.
It's a ball ache to get to Lincoln. So I think it's going to be another one watching on the MUTV. I'm really excited for what United can do in this Checker Trade. Yeah. United could go to Wembley.
I think there is a problem in the sense it sucks for those lower league teams. The competition as a whole sucks for those lower league teams. But from our perspective, if you block out everything else for now, giving those players who can stay within the club, giving them man football is... Well, adult man football is massive.
Beige as fuck. It's garbage.
Yeah. Playing against Rotherham with big 30-year-old men who are going to knock you about is important.
And they did. They tried to do it.
Yeah. When I used to work at Barrow, I spoke to a lad called Kyle Jameson, and he used to be at Chelsea as a youngster in West Brom, and he played for West Brom, the under-23 league for a while. And then he joined Barrow. He's now at Fylde on a permanent, I think. And he was saying how poor the standard was and how slow it was with the under-23s. How much he much preferred playing in conference football because he felt at least it was a step up. He felt at least there was something to be gained.
Intensity and the fact that it actually means something.
Yeah.
You're playing against, especially when you come up against people like Rotherham, you're playing against people that are probably on a 1-year contract. And unlike Premier League footballers, they've got a missus at home going, well, you better get another fucking deal because I'm not going to work.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing that's going to be happening at that level. Or it might not be a case of, like, that his missus doesn't want to work. It might be a case of, like, if he doesn't get another deal, they might not be able to pay the mortgage at that level.
Yeah.
Pretty good money, but what are they
playing,
doing after
playing against geezers who are playing for away. So they're not... Is a different ball game. You need it. And you need that new contract. And everything will be a step up as well. The physicality, step up from under 23 football. Even like the speed of some stuff will be a step up.
The crowd.
The crowd, step up. Like, and having that experience, which is why bringing it back to what we were talking about earlier, why players who come through the lower leagues to become world-class players are better because they know how to adapt their game to different players. If Gomez knows how to handle 30-year-old who's going to knock him about, he'll be able to handle...
Angel's like the most foul player in
the world. He'll be able to handle the new CDM from Brazil who's going to try and elbow you in the face as well.
Yeah.
He'll be able to do it against Reading in the FA Cup as well as against...
Yeah, a team in the Champions League. I think that I understand the lower team's frustration that they thought Premier League teams was going
from
to come
to. From their perspective, it sucks.
But the two finalists in last year's final were lower league teams.
It's only come in this year.
It was last year.
I actually suggested to one of my friends, like, who supports Peterborough. He was like, we were trying to discuss how to enhance that competition in general, and I discussed, well, maybe you try and give the winners like a playoff place in their league. Like to try and enhance it because people don't want to play in it. That's a problem.
No, and it is the thing, right? You make it. They said, you're ruining this competition. Uh-huh. It's just going to be all Premier League teams that win
it. They don't care about it.
The fact that they've had to make a rule which says you can't change your entire squad, you can only change five players, tells you how little of a shit they give about
it. The problem is
Premier League team giving a fuck.
Rapid City a couple of years ago, they literally just got three substitutes out straight away, first minute.
Oh yeah, they did, yeah.
And it's like I honestly think that in that competition, if you make a playoff place available for a team that is outside of playoffs, and you say, right, if you win this, then
why not just say £1 million?
Yeah,
because for a club at that level, that's nothing.
That's nothing for the EFL or the FA, is it?
No, and it makes that competition significant. Because
that's a better way of doing it as well. It doesn't harm the integrity. It doesn't harm the integrity of the league in the playoff places. No. Like, I feel like that might. Giving £1 million though says basically you're going to get a playoff place next year because you'll be able to pay the players for it.
Yeah,
that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, because you can improve a lot on that. £1 million at that level. I mean, I can't really be asked. Well, I don't think City are Googling what the
an amount of money.
You know something? You listen to Accrington Stanley's chairman, I think it is, and he's
on Twitter all the time. He's great. He persistently
says about the fact that they just about break even. So imagine what £1 million would do to that.
But I mean, all of the football levels is relative. Like my team, my family support, like back home in Ireland, Finn Harps, when I say in terms of money wise, it's not owned by anyone. It's co-op, owned by fans, etc. So all of the money they get is entirely through ticket sales. Like money is so relative in football. Mm-hmm. Like £100,000, £10,000 to Finn Harps is the biggest amount of money in the world. And they're competing in a league with people who are getting hundreds of thousands of pounds for playing a European qualifier. Uh-huh. And it's just different levels.
It's like in the FA Cup when you see like teams sometimes play for a replay when they play against bigger teams just to get the extra money.
Yeah.
I know they didn't play for replay because they actually give us a good game. But for example, Cambridge, when they played United,
that's massive.
You get like about £1.5 million for being on telly, and they did it twice, and then they got the Old Trafford money as well.
Have you worked out the money? Is that what you're looking at?
I'm going, this is fucking hard work trying to find.
Just leave it.
What a League Two team turns over.
An awful lot of money though. A lot more than Finn Harps does. Shout out Finn Harps. Best team in Ireland. Going to stay up. Promise.
Oh, because obviously they've got financial fair play that's involved in League One and League Two as well, isn't it? So there'll be something in it. Because if it's part of financial fair play, then it must have been. Have a look.
We're going to figure it out at some point, hopefully. But the other thing that we were going to talk about, well, I'll get started on while you're looking at that, is VAR. And how it's been implemented now this week. Didn't affect us, luckily, but the way in which it's been implemented in other in other games and in other stadiums, I was like a big advocate for bringing it in, and now I really don't know. And then I know that you're definitely for it.
Yeah,
so
I'm 100% for it. Obviously, the Man City game was the big one. Obviously, they scored an amazing goal, which... For me, even though it never gets pointed out because of VAR, it's Gabriel Jesus' incredible intelligence, positioning, standing in an offside area, anticipating the Sterling.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's a sensible thing to do. But so the VAR gets the decisions right. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all agree that getting decisions right should be the aim of football.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I still have a problem with it is because... Accrington
Stanley's turnover was £2.2 million.
So that's what, like 10%, not like 2% of our turnover? One?
We probably pay...
0.5?
Well, we pay Sanchez that every month.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, if the turnover's £2.2 million, which means that you can give them... probably not a lot. So £1 million of profit to just try something.
50% of their turnover.
Come on, man. If you can sponsor, they can find a sponsor for that competition for £1 million, I'm sure.
Yeah, easy. If you go and you react and you tell the advertiser that this is going to be the next big thing, like what's £1 million to Coke?
To have an actual competition that people give a shit about.
If Coke wants to give us £1 million.
Or effort. I'm not saying particularly to court this, because obviously it would be embarrassing for those leagues, but it's like, for example, an official part of the FA, Budweiser, McDonald's, all these sort of things that you see at Wembley Stadium when you go, and they have them out scattered around, they give them big PR events and all. I'm sure for an extra bit of public relations and opportunities.
The FA that makes that money sponsorship £1 million for one of its flagship.
Yeah, and pay their CEO and chairman's ridiculous amounts of money as well. Anyway, but yeah, the with the VAR, I think it's, for me, it's the way in which it's the fact that the rules are wrong. VAR gets the decisions right, and if you have a problem with the decision still, it's because the rules are wrong. The offside rule, for me, it shouldn't just be a line. It should be about fair advantage. So take
daylight then.
Daylight, unfair advantage. Like if your foot or half your foot or something is over the line, that's okay. That's offside. If your toe's off the line, if a scrap of your boot's off the line, if your armpit's off the line,
this
which
one,
is the Sterling
this
one,
one,
it's not
right,
it's not an unfair
Sterling,
advantage. Nonsense,
Saturday.
Isn't it?
They've drawn a line up to his armpit, right? But that line is fatter than how far he's offside, and I think it's down his arm anyway.
For the record, who's ever scored a goal with the armpit? And I think the Ellen White, the second Ellen White goal in the Women's FA Cup World Cup semi-final between USA and England, her second goal, which was disallowed, literally it was the skin of her boot was offside.
Well, I think it's a greater thing of in play. I don't know what people are broadcasting in, but we broadcast in 60 frames a second.
Yep.
That's a lot of frames every single second, right? When you get that picture for VAR where they've drawn the line, we don't know. We know one end of it, which is where they've decided to say, right, that's the line. But why aren't we looking into serious detail? What is when the ball is played? Is it when that frame? Because I would imagine when you kick a ball, it's probably on your toe for at least in 60 frames per second. 10 frames, 15 frames, right? So why aren't we looking back? What is when the ball's played? Is it when my toe makes contact with it? Or is when it leaves?
Because that's massive.
Yeah, that's huge.
Because we're talking about milliseconds of movement here.
It's too accurate.
I'd assume that it's like when the ball literally is leaving your foot. But it's hard to tell. I mean, I've obviously said that I'm a fan of VAR and that I always think that you know, if it's offside, it's offside. But
yeah, that's okay.
But the problem is really the framing of when you decide that the ball has left the boot.
Well, you got to think, why did the offside rule come into play, right? Because people were standing next to the goalkeeper having a brew, right? And the teams were just lumping it forward, right? So the spirit of the rule was brought in
to prevent unfair advantage.
Yeah. So that was when someone's 10 yard behind the defence and a ball's played in, right?
A toenail.
At no point when anyone wrote that rule was they like, one day we're going to be looking at people's armpits and drawing lines in them.
Never.
That's not what it was about. And they want to encourage attacking play and they want to continue with speeding the game up. And VAR, with the current offside rule of these millimeter
and it's wrong
fingers,
it's just wrong because it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't prevent unfair advantage.
That's offside, right?
Yeah.
If a normal person just looks at that and like, if you didn't watch football, you just dragged anyone off the street and was like,
is
he standing in front of him? They go no, and they go fine. Then that's what it should be. It's not in front of him, is it?
Just put it in layman's terms.
You're level.
And also,
is his shirt tight or was it a bit of finger?
That's actually a good point. What if his shirt is baggy and it's over the line? Does that count as offside?
This is fucking ridiculous levels and of depth that you've
football
got to go to.
Is not about increments. It's not about these technicalities. Football's about the passion and love.
No, football's about the inches and the millimeters, yeah,
which is why it's incredibly boring, right? But football is about the passion and the spontaneity and all that stuff. VAR has the danger of ruining it, and the reason why is because it's amplified the problems with the offside rule. It's not that it's... We want to get decisions correct.
What was one with Tammy Abraham yesterday where... There was something else happened at United. Oh, it was the red card offence. Everyone sees it. We know it's not a red card. We still got to check it anyway.
How are they doing VAR at Old Trafford?
Right. If I said to you, think of an 80s TV show, right?
Brilliant. Yeah.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
Think what the computer in an 80s TV show sounds like. That's the VAR voice on traffic. Like, computing.
But did you notice that it was like a game...
VAR not given.
It was like you were sat at Wimbledon or something when it was like, red card check, and everyone's just going, off. Yeah. And then it's like, no red card. And it's
VAR
like,
not given. And you're just like, bollocks to this, man.
It's very, very bizarre. And the other thing is that the slow-mo makes the fouls look 10 times worse than they actually are.
Always. Right, and Joe, on that note, we could go all day long on VAR, just as its own topic. So we won't bother doing that. But thank you guys for joining us. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already. We do appreciate all 20,000 of you that have come and joined us. There's more content coming out all the time on Stretford Paddock, and we've got more stuff planned all the way as well. So thank you guys from the bottom of my heart and from these guys for the opportunity that these guys have had as well to come and present and all the rest of it. And some of them are pretty good.
Not Liam, though.
Right, thank you guys for watching. We will see you in the next one. Laters.
Cheers.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino.
download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.